Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, welcome to the Get a Grip podcast. My name is Shane Bacon. Appreciate you joining. Appreciate you listening, subscribing, all that good stuff. It's been a minute. I've been gallivanting, not just across the country, but around the world. I was out in Napa for the Fortinet, of course, got a chance to catch up with Max Homa. And a big congrats to Max, by the way. He and Lacey had their baby boy on, I believe it was late Monday night into Tuesday morning. So a shout out to the Homas for the addition to the family. But was out at Fortinet, and then my best buddy in the world, Rusty Reynolds, got married in Montana. So I was in Montana, wonderful part of the world, by the way. And I had a day at home, and then I was in Japan. So Zozo Championship wrapped up. Of course, Keegan won that one. And back home and back to the podcast we go. And a great guest, Mark Hubbard, joins this week. One of my favorite guys on the PGA Tour. I think you're going to enjoy the conversation. We talked about hoops. Of course, Hubbard, a great basketball player in high school. We talked about Halloween and the stresses of Halloween. We talked about if we could live in Japan or not. And eventually we talked about golf as well. So I think you'll enjoy it. Big shout out to Mark for joining. And one more thing I got to mention before we get to Mr. Hubbard. I wrote a children's golf book. It's called The Golfer's Zoo. I've spent the last year working on this thing. And it is now not only available to order. You can go to back9press.com/bacon. That's nine, the number, not the word. Back9, the number, press.com/bacon to order it. But it's not just available to order. It's now being shipped out. People are getting their copies right now, reading them to their kids. And a very exciting part of my life and my career in golf is seeing people receive the books and seeing them read it. I got to say, a very emotional moment yesterday. We got a couple of boxes shipped here. And it was the first chance we got to open them and actually see them in a physical, you know, the book in hand. And my wife grabbed it. She went upstairs, she sat on my son's bed, and she read it to Henry, and I was watching it, and let me just tell you, it was hard to not get emotional as this was happening, and Henry actually asked for her to read it again, so at least Henry likes it, and his Yelp review is going to be substantial, but you can check it out, back9press.com/bacon, order it for yourself, order it for a friend, you know, new parents, expecting parents, all that good stuff. I think they'll enjoy it. And just a few shout-outs to Jim, my publisher at Back 9 Press. He did an unreal job putting up with me through this process, finding illustrators, finding, you know, the right look and the size and all that good stuff. So much work goes on in the background of these types of stuff, so I need to give him an enormous shout-out. Aviel is our illustrator, did a great job with this. I'm telling you, the illustrations are better than anything I could have imagined. There's some stuff like my mom, who I need to give a shout out to as well. She helped with some editing, some of the rhyming, those types of things. My mom is an artist. She's an illustrator. She's done stuff like this before. She has been blown away by the illustrations. So a couple of shout outs. And then, of course, to my wife, Cindy. She pushed me to take the idea and to execute it. You know, she was very helpful in, you know, do you like this or that? Bouncing ideas off of her, giving thoughts, and, you know, basically from start to finish, she's been by my side throughout the whole process. So a shout out to my great wife and for the help with all of that. But if you haven't ordered one, if you could, back9press.com/bacon, order a copy. I think you'll enjoy it. I think your kids are going to enjoy it. And something I've been very, very proud of over the last year working on, and it's very cool to see it start to get shipped out. I'll be on some podcasts around the world. I think I'm going to be on Fried Egg in the next few weeks, Golf Subpar in the next few weeks, and the golf.com podcast as well. So you'll be able to hear me not just on this feed, but some other feeds talking about the book. That's enough of me, for goodness sakes. Let's get to our guest, Mark Hubbard from the PGA Tour. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. So you are not home, is what you're telling me. You're not home for the full extent of Halloween, huh?
Yeah, I got a load of videos last night and got very depressed, to be honest. Missing Halloween. My little baby was a cute little butterfly and looked like she had a ball. We had a really cool neighborhood with a bunch of little kids, so she was running around and had a great time. She didn't miss me at all, but I definitely I missed seeing her. So
that's Mark Hubbard, by the way, joining the podcast. Your daughter Harlow, by the way, and this is not meant to be a dig, my puppy, our French bulldog's name is Harlow, so I was very excited to see awesome. Harlow as the name. How old is your daughter?
A year and a half.
Year and a half. So not quite grasping exactly what Halloween is about, but excited about the dressing up part and obviously excited about the candy. And the full report was night went well, no meltdowns, nothing terrible.
No, yeah, she had a great time. Definitely doesn't know what's going on, but loves being a butterfly. So it's probably her favorite animal.
There you go. Henry was a minion. I joined in the minion
Thanks.
experience. Our daughter was a Cabbage Patch Kid, which went over well. And I've decided as a parent, and again, I know you're on the road golfing, but I was talking to a couple of friends of mine last night. Halloween as a parent, I feel like, is kind of eclipsing what we see around Christmas. Obviously, kind of the buildup for Christmas might be a little bit bigger, but I feel like Halloween Day is as exhausting as a parent as Christmas morning is. What did your wife have to say? Like, what was it like talking to your wife at 8 p.m. last night?
I mean, I don't know if this is a great question because she's super pregnant right now. Baby number two is due in December, so she's pretty much exhausted all the time, not just Halloween. But luckily, her mom was there. I think everything went well. I can definitely see that buildup, though. I also think, I don't know, Halloween, it was never my favorite holiday, but I feel like as I get older with kids and stuff like that, it's going to turn into one of my favorite holidays and also a day that, while the kids are trick-or-treating in the neighborhood, the adults can get together and have a beer and hang out and, have them. So it almost turns into more of a fun adult holiday.
Yeah, I mean, the eggnog is basically just beer and wine. You know, when you're walking around, that's definitely a part of our experience last night, which helped. Speaking of beer, we had dinner a couple of weeks ago in Tokyo. A group of us went out for a traditional Japanese restaurant. We sat on the ground. Great group, good food. I need the Mark Hubbard full review of Japan as a country and Japan as a food spot.
Oh, it was unbelievable. I'm not sure what the status of that tournament is going forward, and that makes me pretty bummed because I would live in Japan, man. Everyone's so
Same.
friendly. The food's incredible. It was just, I need to go back on vacation, not just for golf, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking. You know, we were like looking facts up about Tokyo. I mean, it's the biggest city in the world. It doesn't feel like the, I mean, granted, the high rises and such make it feel enormous, but when you're walking around, it doesn't feel big. It's clean, people respectful. They actually obey rules, which is like a very shocking thing coming from the United States to Japan. But you're so right. Like, you're looking around. I was listening to you with Drew and Colt a few months ago, and you did your honeymoon in Bora Bora. We did our honeymoon in Bora Bora as well. And you were talking about kind of off the grid living. I feel like you are one of those guys that would be comfortable like deleting the phone, you know, kind of throwing it away and going and living like in a hut with the family. Is that relatively accurate?
Yeah, that's super accurate. I think there's some cool spots up kind of north part of the island, Japan, where the mountains are, where the skiing is, that I could be pretty happy. I don't think I could. When I say I could live in Japan, I don't know if I could do Tokyo because it is pretty massive and getting around's it's an ordeal. But yeah, I think there's some spots. Maybe get me a little hut somewhere at the base of Mount Fuji.
Well, during dinner, we were talking about the most fun guys to play with on tour and the least fun guys to play with on tour. Now, I'm not going to make you bring up the least fun guys to play with on tour, but Joel Damon, who was at dinner, was mentioned a lot as one of the more fun. What makes a good playing partner as a professional golfer, especially somebody on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's different. Some people love to talk during the round, others don't. And I personally, I get bored out there sometimes. I think Joel can say the same. So we kind of like to be entertained outside of golf and get our minds off of it in between shots. So just someone you can have a conversation with, not about golf, talk about random stuff, other sports, food, like you said, like whatever it may be. I mean, me and Joel get into some pretty dumb conversations out there. But yeah, I just, it's hard enough mentally as a game. I just don't understand how you could be switched on for 6 straight hours. Like for me, I definitely need to kind of go in and out a little bit. So yeah, just someone you can talk about not golf related things with.
Like, is there a level of kind of feeling out the player, like knowing, especially, I know you mentioned on the Subpar podcast, you know, you were paired with Phil Mickelson like late in a round on a weekend. Is there a level of that for you to feel out maybe what this person's about on the golf course where you know, because I know there's a lot of professional golfers and people in general that have absolutely no social skills at all and don't understand that this person's a talker, this person maybe not a talker. Is that something you kind of feel out first few holes when you're playing with somebody new?
Yeah, I think Phil was feeling me out that day, not the other way around.
Ah, I got you.
I think he wanted no part of me, and then I birdied like four of our first five, and then he started chatting me up. So, but yeah, no, they're definitely. I mean, I think it's more feeling out, just kind of getting to know guys. It's so crazy out here with the turnover up and down from the Corn Ferry Tour. Like, there's so many new guys out here this year that I don't recognize or whatever. So there is a feeling out process. And I don't think it's just new people either. Like, I have some buddies that I'm really close with that love going to hang out with and grab a beer with off the course, but on the course, they don't say a word.
Is
yeah,
that so
it's definitely.
strange? Is that like such a strange experience? Like, I know we were joking with Steven Yeager at dinner about you guys all mentioned Yeager as somebody that when it's not going well, maybe not the most fun guy to be with on the golf course. And he agreed, by the way, this isn't like breaking news to Yeager. But is it so weird to have a best friend that when you're between the ropes, the personality or what they're about is totally different?
Yeah, I mean, probably the best example I can think of is your boy Max. He's such a chill dude off the course, and he's an absolute killer maniac on the course. So it is strange, but you know, I think for me, my recipe for success has proved to be just trying to be as much of myself on the course. But then there's other people that, you know, I don't think there's a right way to do it. He's realized, okay, like I need to tap into this whole another part of me that I didn't even necessarily know I had, just this kind of killer instinct. And obviously it's worked out for him because he's playing unbelievable golf. So yeah, I think it's just finding what works for you. And I think, you know, for me, like I said, that's just kind of being my same kind of laid back self.
Yeah, you've been playing some solid golf the last few months. I think you've had three top fives on the tour, including the Sanderson Farms this season. You made all but one cut in this wraparound season already. What do you feel like has clicked? What's switched? What's worked for you late in terms of the way you've been playing?
Yeah, I mean, I think technically my irons have just gotten really, really good in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years. So, I mean, that's helped my proximity to the hole. I've always been a good putter and good short game. So really more than anything, just not having to rely on that day in and day out, give that a break is really nice. I still got a long way to go with the driver. And frankly, I think the best part about this kind of mini run I've been on is that I really don't feel like I've played that amazing. I've just kind of figured out how to get the ball in the hole, which, you know, in my opinion, is what I was really good at in college when I played well. It just kind of didn't really matter what it looked like, but just kind of grinded it out. So I feel like I've been doing a better job of that, not getting caught up in things I can't control and things that don't matter. And really just like, I feel like I've had a bigger level of acceptance on the course. And that's, you know, that's pretty true for me when I've had my good years and something that I've really struggled with when I've had my bad years.
It's so interesting you say you haven't felt like you've played your best golf. And I feel like that's a theme I hear so often from players when stuff kind of clicks or switches, right? Is we think about professional golf, especially PGA Tour golf, as perfection, right? If you're a viewer that watches Saturday and Sunday golf, you're watching the leaders, they're playing awesome, everything's working. Obviously, something's going well that week and they've got it. They're in a good mental space because they're near the top of the lead. What you don't see is the guys that are struggling. Maybe they missed the cut. They open with 76. Is that something that happens as you go through the process of being a pro golfer, understanding and realizing that what you thought of as a PGA Tour player or as a pro golfer or as a PGA Tour champion isn't perfect? It isn't about playing perfect golf. It's about playing maybe sensible golf for 72 holes.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the top guys are incredible. And they hit some shots that I can't even fathom hitting. But I think for the most part, you know, the 150 guys each week out here aren't necessarily even the guys that are playing the best right now or whatever. They're just the guys that know their game the best. They know exactly where they're going to miss it when things are off. Like when I had that stretch, John Deere, Kentucky and Barracuda, I mean, I was playing like a 30 yard cut. Like I was so slappy across it. It was so gross, but the left side of the fairway or the left side of, you know, the hole didn't exist. So I couldn't get into trouble. It was either going right where I was looking or it was going right. And it was super manageable. So I think you're spot on with kind of just knowing how to manage your game. And I think, you know, from a mental standpoint, like that's why golf is so frustrating, because there's days where you're just absolutely puring it and you go out and you shoot one under, and there's days where, you know, you feel like a 10 handicap and you manage a 66. So it is just, it's total acceptance. It's total just, you know, obviously it's, you know, oversaid, but just, you know, one shot at a time type of thing. Like if you don't really care what it looks like, it's pretty easy to just, you know, go hit the next one and have that feeling kind of, okay, I hit this exactly where I was meant to hit it. I'm going to go hit the next shot, whatever. And it's almost not even a conscious thing. You just kind of get good at it. And obviously there's days that are better than others.
Can you tell the story of leading the Sanderson Farms through 54 holes with a hole in your foot?
So my daughter dropped a, well, she knocked a knife off of our cutting board into my toe. So it just kind of like went straight down. And
was this before the turn? Like, was this before Thursday?
This was my week. My week off before. So I had like a week to recover. Freak accident, more than anything, it just freaked me out because, you know, God forbid it could have hit her or, you know, done even worse damage. So that was really more scary than anything. It definitely didn't feel good. And I was limping around a little bit, but it was a pretty small, clean incision. So that happened, whatever, went and played there, went and played Japan. Another off week comes around. I was telling Amanda I had computer issues because Wednesday of my second off week, I'm cleaning the house. My laptop's sitting on a countertop. I bump it off. It falls straight down into the base of my toe like a freaking guillotine. Jesus. And just explodes my big toe. So I was limping around even hard. Bermuda is not an easy walk, let me tell you. And I was limping around super hard last week. So I don't know what's going on in my house right now, but I got to wear shoes 24/7.
I was
going
to say, you need a steel toe shoe sponsorship, like some sort of like Red Wing boots or something.
Totally. It's been bad. But yeah, I think this one was actually worse. Maybe the universe is telling me I shouldn't practice on my off weeks. But yeah, man, it's been a struggle feet wise.
You proposed to your now wife on the green on the 18th hole of Pebble Beach during the Pro-Am. I believe it was after the first round, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You shot 72 that day. I was wondering, what was the cutoff number to you not proposing that day? Like, if you just shot 78, would you have still got down on a knee? 80, would you have still got down on a knee? Was there a number that would have kept you from doing it?
I don't think there was a number. It was really funny reading because, you know, I just did it. We went to school there. It's always been a special place for us. We had a ton of family and friends. So I did it more because I knew everyone was going to be there. Of course, the tour kind of took it and ran with it,
right?
Probably more than we had thought or even wanted. And of course, so it's all over social media. And my favorite thing was reading the comments. They were all like, because Pebble went, you know, Pebble goes deep sometimes. I think I was in like 90th. And they were like, oh, she should have said no. He sucks at golf. Like, you know how freaking toxic
Twitter.
It can be. So, yeah. But yeah, I know. I don't think I really had a number. I did have like a 20 footer that I ran three and a half feet by on 18. And that would have really sucked doing it after a three putt from 20 feet. So I'm glad I probably lipped that one in. But yeah, I don't think I had a number. It was more, I planned it. I don't think she could have said no, standing on the beautiful cliffs there. So
the day I proposed after a friend's wedding, we were on a trip and I had it all planned. I talked to the person that was getting married and I said, hey, I'm proposing the day after your wedding. Is that cool? She said, absolutely. As long as it's the day after, no worries. And the night before was the only night of my entire relationship with my now wife where she gave me shit about not proposing. Like, I think, you know, she was a little drunk, she'd had a few cocktails, like, we're at this beautiful wedding, but she kind of comes up to me and she's like, so what's the deal here? And of course now I get to play the game, right? I mean, I obviously know what's happening the next day. Oh, I thought you were happy, I thought we were good, you know, a couple years away, blah blah blah. And I mean, she was fired up that night. But I was wondering, I mean, that day going into the round, you know what's happening, the ring's probably in your golf bag somewhere. Was it almost easier to play golf? Because I can only imagine that's floating above your head the whole day.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about it a ton until kind of coming down the stretch. My caddy then at the time, Johan, who's one of my good buddies, he said that was probably the most nervous day he's had. He had
the
it
rings
in
the back.
Pockets on the, yeah, he had it in the pocket. He had like his hand on the zipped up pocket the whole day. Like, there's a lot of cliffs out there that can fall into the ocean and never be found again. So, no, I mean, we had been together for so long and, you know, I just knew that it's actually a really funny story. I was going to say, I knew that I couldn't just take her to like, you know, a dinner. We've had 1,000 dinners or somewhere. So it had to be somewhere unique. We had apparently a couple of years before had a conversation where she had told me that when I proposed, she wanted to be just the two of us. I don't remember this at all, but I did the exact opposite. We ended up on SportsCenter. So good for me. But yeah,
so
it's something we look back on. Yeah, so close.
Speaking of Johan, you on your PGA Tour profile, and who the hell knows when these things are written or when you've answered these questions, You might have the most random dream foursome of all time.
You told me that in Japan.
Oh my God. E. Harvey Ward, Walter Hagen, and Johan. What the hell? Like, I need you to take me through these four, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'm not a big history guy in terms of, you know, like diving into the history of golf and stuff like that. But two guys that I always, you know, looked at when reading books and stuff like that were Harvey Ward and Walter Hagen. They seemed like my type of guys. Again, like we talked about, just kind of dig it out of the dirt, didn't really care what it looked like, and definitely had a good time back then. I think me and Joel might have missed our golf era by a couple decades. I think we would have thrived.
55, 60 years, right?
Yeah. I think we would have thrived back in those days. And then Johan's, you know, he's one of my best buddies out here, caddied for me for like 2.5 years, and also an unbelievable drunk golfer. He was a pretty average pro when he played, had some back stuff, but now since he's left professional golf, he can really tear it up and gets better as the drinks go down. So
Joel Damon's probably the number one ranked drunk golfer in the world. I think that's relatively fair to say. I mean, hell, what did he shoot? Yeah. 58 at Mesa after about 12 White Claws. Where's Johan in terms of the OWGR of drunk golfers? Is he top 20, top 30 player in the world if his BAC is like 0.12?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely, as far as I know, I mean, he's not as good as Joel in general. But man, he shoots a lot of 68s when he can't even walk straight. So yeah, I would put him up there. He definitely knows how to have a good time.
So the part of the conversation I was most excited about, I wanted to talk some basketball with you. You were All-State in B-ball when you were in high school. I know you talked about potentially going and doing both sports in college. You were going to think about playing basketball and golf. Obviously, you made the good decision to settle on golf. Let's talk about your hoops game. What kind of player were you? What was your high score in high school? Kind of run us through the Mark Hubbard like bio as a basketball player.
Yeah, my basketball game right now is non-existent. I can't remember the last time I shot a ball on anything but my daughter's little 2-foot-tall hoop. But yeah, I could light it up a little in high school.
Like a
shooter?
I was
pretty small. Yeah, I was mostly R2. My senior year, I probably played a little bit more of R3 just because I got a little better kind of slashing and improved my ball handling over the offseason a little bit. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I was a pull-up three-point shooter. I think my high was 44 in the first game of state my senior year. But yeah, I mean, I think at one point, my junior or senior year, I think I had the record for most three-pointers made. You were asking me what it is. I don't know what it is in Colorado. It's Colorado basketball. It's not like we're a powerhouse anyways. But, you know, for average size, not that athletic, little white dude, I think I had a pretty good career, so I can't jump for shit.
I mean, basketball is my favorite sport. It's the sport that, like, when I got out of college and was living in Scottsdale trying to figure out what the hell I was going to do with my life, you know, I'm playing like 4 or 5 days of pickup at LA Fitness. I mean, I'm playing as much as you can play without, you know, basically just like living in the LA Fitness. You said you don't really play hoops anymore. Did you do that after college? Like when you were playing pro golf, did you play pickup at all? Or was that one of those things that when you were done, you were kind of done?
Yeah. If I have been good at something and then I'm not as good at that anymore, I can't do it. Like, okay. And that's where I am a chill dude, but I have that competitive side of me. And like skiing, for example, I feel like I've actually gotten better over the years than I was in high school. So I still enjoy to do that. But yeah, I mean, I took some time off just because I missed basketball so much. And our team at San Jose State was not very good when I was there. They got better as we went on. But like my first year, it was a struggle and I couldn't even watch. And so, yeah, I took some time away. And then when I came back, I mean, I'm horrible now. So it's just not as fun. I still love the game, still love watching it. But you won't see me playing much pickup anymore.
By the way, how weird is that? How weird is life that for what, 18 years of your life? I mean, you're a guy that would wake up in the morning and grab a golf club or a basketball, right? I mean, that's your life. That's what you know.
It was a basketball 90% of the time.
Yeah. And just to never touch it now. I mean, I think about this all the time. Like, it's just not even a thing you even think about doing compared to half of your life. It was everything you thought about.
Yeah, totally. It is really weird how you grow and change, and I do miss it. I do, obviously there's part of me that wish I had explored it just to see how far I could take it, even though I know there's 0% chance I would ever end up at the same level in basketball as I am in golf now. But I got a buddy who played in Europe. He was obviously far better than me, but looking at his life and stuff, like, it looked pretty fun. And I think I would have had a lot of fun in college. But yeah, it's weird how life, takes different paths and kind of forks in the road.
Do you watch it? I mean, are you consuming college basketball pro? Are you a Nuggets guy? Do you watch it consistently?
Yeah, I'm definitely a Nuggets guy. I'm very excited to have Murray and Porter back this year. I know we just lost to the dumb Lakers, which the NBA is kind of weird right now. Everybody's beating
They were
everybody,
going to
but
win a
it's a
game eventually, I guess. I guess we
yeah,
have to give
it
them
had to be
one, yeah.
against us. Yeah, that's a very Colorado thing, play down to your opponent, so it's fine. But yeah, no, I think we're going to be good this year with those guys back, and I enjoy it. My wife's a big Kings fan, so we go to a lot of games. She's from Sacramento, so we definitely still watch it. College basketball, I love March Madness, but we, San Jose State's not there most of the time. So, same thing with college football. It's tougher for me to follow it religiously just because I don't really have a team.
You mentioned skiing. You said you've gotten better at skiing. I mean, have you mentioned heli skiing in your profile that you would be interested in doing heli skiing more? Have you ever done it before? Have you ever heli skied?
I've done it one time. I would not be interested in doing it anymore.
Okay.
I say I've gotten better at skiing, which I believe I have. But I think I also take a lot less risks and do a lot less dumb stuff than I used
You
to.
got a kid now,
So
man.
that, yeah.
You can't die doing dumb stuff when you have a child. That's what the only rule I've been given from my wife.
That's
Just
a
don't
pretty
be an
good rule.
idiot and die. Like, die. If you die doing something that's normal, week to week, day to day, that's one thing. But like my wife, and it's me and hiking. She'll be like, no. That's like too extreme. That mountain's too high. If you fall off the mountain, I got to tell that story for 50 years. I'm like, that's a fair point.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think I definitely have that rule. I think jail is also in there. Anytime I leave, like, no
Yeah.
jail,
Don't go to jail.
no emergency room, and yeah, don't do anything stupid. So, but yeah, no, I mean, honestly, I think the reason I've always been a big skier, but the reason I've gotten so into it is because my wife has taken it up. I think the first part of our relationship, we did a little bit of golf, went to a lot of tropical places, and she even did some scuba diving or whatever. But really, the skiing is kind of the bug that she caught. She's obsessed with it, and so now when we go on vacations, we go, places where there's snow. So that's been a lot of fun for me.
All right, there are some perfect brand partnerships over the years in golf. I always go back to Retief Goosen when he was sponsored by Grey Goose Vodka for a while. I always just felt like this should go on forever. You've got a peanut deal going with Hubb's Peanuts. Oh, there you go. Show it off. It seems like a perfect match made in heaven. How did this come about?
Yeah, it is. Marshall is the guy who runs it. He's the one who reached out to me. His family, it's his family's business. I think his grandparents were awesome golfers. I think his grandma Dot, like, shot her age well into her 80s, like, was just a scratch golfer, just total badass. And so they've just always kind of been a golf family. And so they reached out to me. I think it was when I was playing with Bryson in Detroit. We were in the final group. And he actually slid into my DMs and was like, "Hey, this is perfect. Same last name. Let's do this. We love golf." And since then, I'd like to think with a little bit of my help. I mean, I think they were doing just fine on their own without me, but they've gotten a little more into the golf world. They're at, four or five of our PGA Tour events. I know they help out with Leishman's Foundation event every year. I think they were at Napa. They've been at Quail Hollow before. Yeah, so they're going to be all over. And they're smaller. They kind of do more some boutique stores, but then they go up and down kind of the Southeast coast and supply to a lot of golf courses. So, if there's ever a golf course that wants to do some sort of partnership and put their own label on it, they do it, and they do a great job, and they're awesome guys, man.
How has Steven Yeager not gotten the Jägermeister deal? Like, how? I mean, it's
It's
just sitting there.
I honestly think he's actively trying to not
Okay.
get.
I got
We
you.
actually we played together in Japan, and we had this walking score. Bless his heart, awesome guy. He was with me the day before, but like way too into it, like way too intense. Super did not know. Like, he's not a fan. Like, you're the scorer, you're just supposed to stay out of the way. And first tee shot, Jaeger hits one, bombs it, but in the right rough. And the guy, like, as the ball's leaving the tee, is like, "Jaeger
Oh
bombs!"
God.
And Jaeger looked around. He's like, "Does that come from our score?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's gonna be a long day, bud." So I think he might actively be trying to not have that partnership.
It would just be great. I keep thinking that you make the golf bag like one of the Jaeger bottles because it kind of looks a little bit like a golf bag.
Man.
Just carry that bad boy around. I mean, who's not going to be into that? And you're a guy that has played around with a golf bag. You did the whiteboard last year. Are you still doing the whiteboard?
I still have that. So, yeah, if you have any suggestions before Thursday, yeah, let me know.
So tell people what you're doing with it, because are you actually getting – has there been companies that have reached out at all? I know you've kind of put some random messages on there. But I think it's one of the more brilliant marketing strategies and opportunities in golf.
Yeah, no, I haven't had any companies reach out. It's more just been my buddies, some podcasts I've gone on, and then, yeah, just some random ideas. But I have a new bag. They had to kind of rush it to me, so my name didn't get put on it. And I just bought this, like, sticky tape whiteboard paper. I've just been kind of rolling with it since. I think the fall is probably the end of it. Local IQ is hooking me up with a new bag. It's going to be awesome. They're doing like a big Colorado theme. So, but yeah, for the time being, if there's anything you want me to advertise or any fun things you want me to put on there,
you just got to Venmo. You Venmo Hubbard $500, and then he'll throw whatever you want on there. That's kind of how we work.
We did do that one day. We put my caddy Kyle's Venmo and asked people to buy him White Claws, and I think he got like $100+ Venmo'd to him. So it's awesome.
People do anything for a good laugh.
Yeah.
Now you don't have to mention the player. You can mention the player if you want. You told an awesome story at dinner. I'd love for you to tell it again. You were paired with a guy a couple of years ago at the PGA Championship. You were playing excellent golf through two rounds. And then a professional golfer, somebody that plays professional golf, asked you a question a few holes left that hinted at the fact that he wasn't totally sure who you were.
Yeah. It was Michael Hebert. Am I saying his name right?
Yeah.
Aussie. And obviously he's a good player, you know, won in Bermuda last year, I think. So in his own right, good player. But, you know, like at that time, I think it was my first major, but, you know, I hadn't had a horrible career. I'd been on tour 4 or 5 years. I'm bested, whatever. And yeah, and I'm playing well through two rounds. You know, I'm probably like 5 under. He was like 3 under, you know, like obviously I'm under par at a major, like things aren't bad. And we're through about, you know, 22 holes or 32 holes, like coming down our back nine. And he looks at me, he's like, "So what do you do outside of this?" And I'm like, "What? Like, I do this, like, this is my job." And he, the entire time, had thought that I was some club pro that had gotten in from the PGA. Like, at the time I didn't have the same logos on my shirt. I hadn't, but still I'm like, I'm 5 under in the PGA Championship. Like, what?
I mean, just to bring it up, like, "Hey, so you going back to your shop after this?" Or like,
"Yeah,
if you make the cut, what's the plan?" I mean, uncomfortable for him as well. But if nothing else, I'm
for sure,
a little
for
bit of motivation.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it's something about my face. I don't know. Like, I half the time I walk in and they're like, "Oh, caddy registration's over here." I'm like, "Cool, I'll tell my caddy." Like, it's just kind of my vibe, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were at dinner. We were talking a lot about kind of misconceptions on tour. And something that a few of you guys had brought up is how many pro-am partners will talk to you guys about what else you do. Like, what else are you doing? And you're like, "Well, I play PGA Tour golf." I mean, this is the highest you can get to, right? I mean, this is Fortune 500 level work if you're a pro golfer. And you're asking me what else I do on the outside of this.
Yeah. Oh, can you like actually make a living doing this?
So weird.
It's so weird. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of those guys are just corporate guys that aren't big golfers, that, you know, their company kind of just was like, "Oh, go have a fun day. Like, you earned it." But yeah, man, it's bizarre.
What's been the biggest misconception for you? Like, from when you were a kid thinking about being a pro golfer to now being a pro golfer on the PGA Tour, what's been something that either has been totally different in a good way or totally different maybe in a way you didn't think it would be?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely lots of, like, don't get me wrong, my life is super awesome. And there's lots of things that have surprised me how fun they are. I think from a good standpoint, just how cool everybody is out here, how many great friends and relationships I've made out here, I kind of thought it would be a lot more cutthroat than it is. But I also think that's kind of the nature of the game. Like, it is a gentleman's sport, and we're all just kind of playing against ourselves and the golf course, and we can't really control what the other person's doing. So how cool everybody is has been really surprising. I would say, though, that I think most of the people would agree with this. You know, we grew up putting golf, the PGA Tour, on this pedestal. We think it's going to be insane, and we're going to have a yacht and fly in a private jet. Like, me and my high school buddies were like, yeah, I'm going to make the PGA Tour, and we're going to buy a castle in Spain, and I'll live there. Like, I can't buy a shack in Spain right now. Like, it's just a lot. It's a lot harder and a lot less glamorous. You know, obviously the top, you know, 10, 20 guys are living a different life. But I mean, for most of us, like, we're paying for all of our own expenses. We're grinding on flights. You know, even just having to play in those pro-ams, we're doing it to, you know, pay for our hotel and our coach and stuff for the week. You know, we were in Bermuda last week. The tour got us a charter. We got picked up at 5 a.m., got to the airport for our 8 o'clock flight, and the Bermuda airport police were like, yeah, the airport doesn't open till 7. You're not leaving till 10. And 150 of us were sitting on the curb of the Bermuda airport outside a closed airport. So, you know, it's just not the glamorous life that people think it is, which I think is probably where a lot of those relationships come from, just because we can kind of lean on each other and feel like we have a mini family out here to get through, you know, some of the grind. But it's definitely not this like glamorous life that I think people think it is.
How does the charter seating work? I've always wondered this. Like, a pro, like the PGA Tour has a charter flight. Who gets first class? Who gets the front of coach, if you will? Is there coach on these flights? Like, how does that process work?
So on the way to Japan, they did it just based on your FedEx Cup ranking. And then obviously, you know, your wife would sit with you, and then it, you know, kind of went to caddies and their players. So it kind of, you know, it was definitely based on some sort of order of merit. I don't know if you heard me say that we got to the airport at 5:15 and sat out on a curb till 7, but this charter flight didn't have any order at all.
So I got
it was
you.
A complete Southwest free for all. But instead of letters, there was just shapes, and no
Who's
one knew B-39? Where they
were.
Our boarding pass was just a piece of paper with our name written on it, and the name, like, it was hand delivered. Like, it was just, it was mayhem.
Didn't need your passport.
No seats.
Yeah, that one.
No, yeah. We got to Mexico, and they're like, passport and boarding pass at immigration, or like passport. And then it's like this sticky note drawn with crayon. We're like, does this get us in? Like,
are we good here? Is this going to pass?
Yeah.
Speaking of kind of pro golf, and this is something I'll get you out on. I mentioned the interview you did with the guys on Subpar. And by the way, go listen to that if you hadn't. It was great. But you guys talked a little bit of LIV. I've really tried to avoid a lot of LIV talk on this podcast over the last few months, because I think you can get it elsewhere. But you said about LIV that it makes you nervous about the future of golf. And I was just interested in what makes you nervous about the future of golf in terms of LIV, PGA Tour, and what's been happening over the last few months.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think the whole thing has been done sort of behind this ruse of growing the game. But really, and we've already seen it, you know, it's kind of making the game smaller. We've already had to, in order to compete with them, make some changes, bring it down from 125 to 70. You know, we're having to compete with, you know, crazy amounts of money and scheduling and really cater to our top players, because they're what we get the TV ratings from. And that's a whole nother cup of tea, that I don't need to get into right now. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing is talking about growing the game, and I don't see how less players playing golf is growing the game, and how a bunch of guys who already have millions of dollars playing essentially an exhibition event for more money is going to get, you know, young kids involved. I am a little concerned about the future. I think, you know, I know when I was growing up, I wouldn't have had a whole lot of interest in watching LIV versus watching, you know, Tiger chase Jack Nicklaus's major record. So it's interesting. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, you know, the whole LIV thing to me has felt, you know, it's almost like paparazzi level coverage, right? Where do I really care who Kanye West is dating? No, I do not care who Kanye West is dating. But if I'm scrolling on my phone and there's a pop-up story about it on like one of those things that Instagram configures to your phone, I might read this caption, right? And I feel like that with LIV a lot. It's been a lot of who's going where and how much are they making. And then when it actually comes down to the meat and potatoes of golf, I'm always going to watch the PGA Tour over LIV, right? And I think something you said in the interview with Drew and Colt was the team thing is interesting. when it's perfected. When the team thing is done the appropriate way and the right way, that's a unique way to go about golf. But when you're talking about stroke play golf week to week, you know, the interest is always going to land with the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour because it's been around for a long time and we can quantify what happens and what matters with a win and with the top 10.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't know. I think the money is obviously awesome in both places. But I don't think that's why any of us really play. One of my favorite guys I've talked to about this is Will Zalatoris, and he's been pretty open saying this too. Like, if he won the lottery tomorrow and had, you know, $150 million or $1 billion or whatever, he would still play 20, 25 events on the PGA Tour every year because he's not out here for the money. Like, he's out here to be as good as he can possibly be, to play as well as he can possibly play, to chase down majors, to chase down history. And, you know, that's something where it's like, I get why those guys went over there. Like, I get why Pat Perez went over there, and I don't mean to call him out, but like, I just can't imagine, you know, a guy at that stage in his career is going over there and grinding after a 72 when he's got, you know, 30 million bank. He's going to make another four because his team wins. So in terms of just the golf in general, I think as a sustainability, like, I don't think guys are going over there to get better. So essentially that unless they figure out how to perfect that team thing, like, the golf itself is probably going to get worse. Just from a competition level. So,
Hubs, real quick, since your beard is so epic right now, and I mean, obviously you're winning the beard competition. I've been growing mine for a bit. Can you give me a grade? It's got a little gray on here, by the way, right now.
I kind of like the salt and pepper, so I wouldn't worry about that. I think it's a nice distinguished look. I've been on the road for 2 weeks without my wife. That's why this is looking the way it is. The stash is kind of getting overgrown. It's not as manicured, but much more me.
God, so. It looks so good. Is that your hat, by the way? Is that your own hat?
No, this is True Links. They're kind of dead golfer brand.
You might have to get me some of these. Those are really good.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I do have one with the homeless guy on it, if you want me to go grab it.
Let's figure that out. Let's get that let's get that sent over. What's schedule look like for the rest of the year? What else are you playing in?
Yeah, I'm going to play everything. Like I said, baby number two is coming in December. So I don't know how much practice I'm going to get in this off season. I don't know how I'm going to look in Sony. So I just want to grind this fall season off and get as many points as I can. So I'm here in Mexico this week and then nice little home event in Houston next week and then Seattle to end the year.
Well, awesome. Well, I appreciate the time, Mark Hubbard. Always good to chat with you. Good luck this week. Good luck in Houston. I'll be down in Houston, so I'll run into you and say what's up. And everybody check out what Hub's about and what he's doing. And let's see a 3 or 4 shot lead on the 18th green on Sunday so we can at least see the snell on the first putt. What's the lead got to be? What's the lead got to be on the 18th green for the snell to hit the first putt?
I mean, the first putt, it depends on the length because –
we're 30 feet away, 4-shot lead, 3-shot lead. What is it? Could it be broken out?
I think it's 3-shot lead, hit the first putt normal.
Okay.
The first tap in snail. And then if it doesn't go in, then I'm just an asshole. And then I can tap it in.
Then it's just regular. Embarrassing.
Yeah, then it's embarrassing. But I'll be embarrassed with my winner's check.
That's exactly right. So. With the trophy and the check and all the years ahead. Well, I appreciate the time, Mark. Thanks so much.
Yeah, had a blast. Thanks.
A big thanks to Mark for taking the time. Obviously, tournament week, so jumping on in the morning on a Tuesday before he had to go out and get his work in. Big thanks to Mark. Just a reminder, the Golfer Zoo is out. You can go to back9press.com/bacon and order a copy. And that does it for this week's. Got a really different episode coming next week. I've got a good friend of the program and someone you probably listen to on a weekly basis going to join me, and we're going to talk about golf scrambles. We're going to dive into golf scrambles, the good, the bad, the ugly. We're going to ask for, you know, submissions from you all on social media about your best scramble stories and your best experiences in golf scrambles. So look for that on Twitter, and we'll be back next week.
Get a Grip with Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio.